This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Educators around the country occasionally have to teach some controversial topics, but odds are you wouldn't put reading in that category. You'd be wrong.
We had a lot of debates about how children learn to read. We've had a lot of science about how that really works. And that science is just not making its way into the classroom.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk to a longtime education journalist about her new documentary, which explores how the science of teaching reading is losing in the classroom. We'll also spend an academic minute with a special font that is helping people with dyslexia read. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. There have been disagreements about the best way to teach a child to read for decades, and calling them just disagreements is putting it mildly. When she started work on her latest reporting project, Emily Hanford knew all about the so-called reading wars, but still dug deeper and found that science and tradition are still at battle in classrooms around the country, and science is losing. Emily Hanford is an award-winning senior education correspondent at APM Reports, part of American Public Media. Her reporting on this topic can be heard in the new documentary, Hard Words: Why Aren't Kids Being Taught to Read? We spoke recently, and I asked why she took on this project.
What brought me to this topic? I have been an education reporter for more than a decade, and I really didn't know anything about how children learn to read or how they're taught to read. And I did a documentary a year ago, which looks specifically at students with dyslexia and how difficult it is for many of them to get the help they need in school. That actually came out of a documentary from the year before, which is about remedial education in college and how many people end up in remedial classes when they get to college. So I was seeing these links between people with learning disabilities that weren't addressed when they were in K through 12 having a problem when they got to college. That's not all that's going on with remedial education, but that's a part of it. So that led me to investigate reading disabilities in particular and dyslexia. And what I learned in a year of reporting on dyslexia is that it's a much bigger problem than that there are some people, some children with learning disabilities who are not getting the help they need in school. Because what the research clearly shows, and there's a ton of research about how children learn to read and how they need to be taught, what the research shows clearly is that what kids with learning disabilities need, what kids with dyslexia need, is not that different than what all kids need. And the problem in many schools when it comes to kids with dyslexia is that that kind of instruction is not happening for all kids, and there's not enough of an understanding among a lot of people in schools about how children learn to read and what they need. So it's kind of there's a really severe problem for kids with dyslexia, but it is, an analogy I made in that earlier documentary is like kids with dyslexia are like the canary in the coal mine. And the issue here is core reading instruction and the fact that we don't have enough knowledge about how reading works that's making its way into American schools.
And you discovered that this is a pretty controversial subject among educators, didn't you?
I certainly did. I knew that it was a controversial topic. I started reporting on education full-time in about 2008. So I knew about the quote-unquote reading wars from the 1980s, 90s, and early 2000s. And I, like a lot of people, thought they were over and done. And so when I started to report on this, I was aware that this was controversial. And what I learned is that the reading wars really aren't over and done. Or, if you want to put a really depressing spin on it, they're over and science lost, which is the way that one cognitive neuroscientist put it to me. We had a lot of debates about how children learn to read. We've had a lot of science about how that really works. And like I said earlier, that science is just not making its way into the classroom. So we've kind of pushed away a lot of this debate about reading. And people would roll their eyes at me like, you don't want to talk about the reading wars, do you? Those are over. But I think the big news here is they're not over, unfortunately.
You spoke about the science, and I guess the crux of the controversy is there are those who say that reading comes naturally, just like speaking, and science says not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think a really important piece of context here is that for a really long time, we didn't know how children learn to read. I mean, we didn't know that much about how we learn anything. But in the past several decades, especially over the last 20 years, there's been a huge amount of research about this. It's not happening in colleges of education generally, though. It's happening in psychology departments, neuroscience departments, linguistics. There's a huge amount of research about this, and it has really answered the question that was the source of the debate in the reading wars, which was, as you said, there's sort of one view of how children learn to read, and a core belief in that view is that it's a natural process, and that if you surround kids with good books, you motivate them to want to read, they basically figure it out with some guidance, with some help along the way. But it's mostly something that will happen if kids are in the right environment, which means that the teacher's job is to create a classroom that motivates children to want to read and exposes them to lots of wonderful books and great literature. The other view, which was represented by the quote-unquote phonics side, and we could talk for a minute about why I don't think this is really a debate about phonics, but in the reading wars, there was sort of the whole language side, which is what I just described, and then this phonics side. And the phonics people said, no, learning to read is this skill that needs to be taught. Kids have to unlock this code, which is the language and the way that we represent speech sounds with print. And children need to be taught this to become readers. And that was a big, very emotional debate in the 80s and 90s, whole language versus phonics. And like I said, I think one of the reasons that it was so emotional is that it wasn't just about phonics. It was more about beliefs about how children learn. And the whole language point of view was very much that we don't need to have sort of drill and kill skills-based instruction. We don't need a teacher standing at the front of the room teaching kids things. Kids construct their own knowledge and are best when they direct their own knowledge, and they'll learn if they're in the right environment. So anyway, there was a lot of fights about that. But what the cognitive science, the neuroscience makes really clear is that one side of that was right, which is that learning to read is not at all natural. Our brains are not evolved to do it because we just invented reading and writing relatively recently as human beings. So our brains literally don't know how to do it. It's something that we need to learn. And it is something that most people, in fact, all people, need to be systematically taught. Some people learn it with very, very minimal instruction. But others, like people with dyslexia, need lots and lots of very systematic and explicit instruction in how words are representations of speech sounds. Because our brains are evolved to do that. If there's a baby and people talk to that baby and interact with that baby, unless there's some sort of cognitive problem or injury, that baby will learn to talk. It comes naturally. Our brains are meant to do it. But it's not so with reading.
In your reporting, you spoke, you talked a lot about two separate areas. One was Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. The other was Mississippi. Talk about what happened in Bethlehem.
Yeah, Bethlehem's a great story. So Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is a place that had been struggling for a while with reading. You know, 60% of the kids were reading proficiently, which is actually better than a lot of our indications show is happening nationwide. They were actually struggling with a lot of things in Bethlehem that had to do with some economic problems. The recession had a big impact there. There was a new person who came in as the chief academic officer. He'd sort of noticed for a few years that the reading scores weren't so great, but, you know, they weren't that much worse than anywhere else. Finally, when a lot of things kind of settled down and they dug themselves out of the economic crisis, he kind of decided to look at this and think, why are so many of our kids not reading proficiently? Like, what is up with that? And this guy was a former high school teacher, social studies teacher. He didn't know anything about how kids learn to read or how they should be taught. So he literally started Googling it. And what he discovered is this vast scientific literature. There is so much known. In fact, one of the people in the documentary says this is like one of the most studied aspects of human learning. So when he discovered that, he thought, there's all this research that says, and what the research says is that virtually all kids can learn to read. We should not have 40%, 50% of kids struggling with reading. Scientists have shown in clinics and in demonstration projects in classrooms that if you use approaches to teaching reading that line up with the cognitive science about how kids learn to read, virtually all kids can learn to read. There's some small percentage that have such severe learning disabilities and cognitive issues that reading is always going to be a struggle for them. But everyone else should be able to learn to read. So when this guy, Jack Silva, the chief academic officer, realized that, he thought, well, how come we can't get our reading scores up? So that started this multi-year project to figure out, how are we teaching kids to read? Does that line up with the science? And what do we need to do to change it?
And eventually they came up with a curriculum, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, curriculum is actually an interesting part of this that I did not go into depth in the documentary. What they really focused on initially is teacher and principal knowledge. Because to the credit of the chief academic officer, Jack Silva, I think he figured out right away that this was a knowledge problem. That there were some things about the way that they were teaching reading in the schools that pretty typical when you look at other schools in the United States that really assumed that learning to read is basically a natural process, that kids learn to read by reading rather than being explicitly taught how to read. So he recognized that really early and invested very heavily first in training all of the principals at all the elementary schools. And I think it was a really brilliant move, because what he realized is that if the principals didn't learn this, if the principals weren't convinced that the way that reading was being taught didn't line up with the science, then they weren't going to be champions for that. They weren't going to lead their teachers to that discovery too. So all of the principals went through pretty intensive training where they really learned about the basic science of reading. And it's completely fascinating. They went through the studies. They showed the principals like why a lot of the stuff that they were doing just doesn't line up with the science. And then they systematically started by training all the kindergarten teachers and then all the first and second grade teachers. And they've seen really remarkable progress at a couple of the schools in Bethlehem that used to really struggle, schools with a lot of kids from poor families. At a couple of the schools, they've got 100% of kindergartners up to the benchmark on this test that they give them at the end of kindergarten, which is an indicator of whether they're going to struggle with reading. And actually, the really amazing thing that I don't go into the documentary is that they've gotten a huge percentage of kids way above where they should be at the end of kindergarten. So they're really knocking it out of the park so far. It remains to be seen whether this is really going to work and they can sustain it, and it's going to make a difference when kids get to third and fourth grade, which is where a lot of kids fall apart when it comes to their reading skill.
Still to come, our conversation with education reporter Emily Hanford continues with a look at how teachers reacted to these new ideas. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Emily Hanford, a senior education correspondent at APM Reports, part of American Public Media. We're talking about her new documentary called Hard Words: Why Aren't Kids Being Taught to Read? I asked her if the teachers were buying into what the newly trained principals were telling them.
There was definitely resistance at the beginning. I think that's a given because I think there's almost no way there's not going to be resistance because this is a school system that has a lot of veteran teachers. So teachers had been teaching reading the way that they were teaching it for 10, 15, 20, 25 years. But what I found in the teachers I talked to, even those veterans who've been around for a long time, is that when they started to learn the science, they had all these aha moments. They're like, oh, aha, huh. And then these things that had kind of been bugging them for a while started to come into focus, like the way we were teaching reading was working for a lot of kids, but there were always some kids, kind of maybe a lot of kids, that it wasn't really working for. But the teachers didn't know what to do because they were well-trained. They were doing a good job. These are good teachers. They were doing what they were told to do by their own teacher preparation programs and by the professional development they were getting in their schools. They were doing everything right, or so they thought. But they still knew that, like, some of these kids were really struggling. And when they learned some of these really basic things about the science, I think a lot of them went, oh, right. That's why that wasn't working. And there's this kind of this thing that a lot of the teachers described, which is first being completely overwhelmed learning the science, then being kind of shocked, like, oh, my God. And then feeling really guilty, like, oh, wow, I was teaching all these kids in this other way. What happened to them? And then sort of digging in, like, okay, I didn't know what I didn't know. Now let's do better. Let's go for it. And a lot of the teachers in that school system are really charged up and psyched about this because it's really invigorating to start to teach reading in a different way and see it really working.
So where do the solutions begin to this? I suggest that it's not in the classroom.
Well, I think it's partly in the classroom because I actually think that teachers are a very I think they're ready for this news. If Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and I've talked to teachers in other districts too, I think that when teachers start learning the science, most of them are really open to it because they're trying to teach kids to read every day and they know that a lot of it isn't working. So I think a lot of them getting over initial resistance and initial guilt, many of them are really open to this. I think a bigger challenge is figuring out how to do that. That's a big investment of time and money to retrain teachers. So that's a big issue. And then I think a big issue is teacher training. And what my reporting found, there's a number of surveys and studies and a lot of anecdotal evidence at this point that suggests that most teachers are not learning this science in their teacher preparation programs. And ultimately, that's what needs to change because school districts can invest a lot of money in retraining all their teachers. But if every year the new teachers they hire haven't learned this stuff, they're going to be training teachers forever. So it really needs to be both. We need to really work on identifying what the teachers who are currently in our schools know about reading and what they need to learn. And we really need to change what is happening in teacher preparation programs.
Outside of the school, does that mean there needs to be action from school boards and other leaders?
Yes, I think that there's probably a lot of different places where the pressure needs to be put on. I think a lot of what has been changing has come from parent activism on this, although interestingly, that is not what the precipitator of change was in Bethlehem. But as I have talked to people in lots of other districts, you do find that it's parent pressure that is often the lever that starts to get things to change. I also think that teachers need to speak up about what they learned in their teacher preparation programs. So that was a feeling among the teachers in Bethlehem after they learned this science, like, why didn't I learn this in my teacher prep program? There's been some exchanges about that on Twitter recently, some people recommending that teachers write letters to the deans of their colleges of education saying, why didn't I learn this? So I think there does need to be pressure there. And there's a role for school boards, certainly, and state lawmakers. But I think at the bottom of it all, it really is an education challenge. Like, we really, there really are deeply embedded a lot of beliefs about how children learn to read that just don't square with the science. And I think everyone from school board members, state legislators, principals, teachers, faculty and teacher preparation programs need to learn this. And there's fascinating books and tons of articles that have been written about it. And anyone who's curious, once you start reading this stuff, it's just mind-blowingly interesting. So I recommend people read it.
Let us know how to get a hold of your documentary.
Sure. People can go to apmreports.org, which is our website. There's a documentaries tab there, and you can find all of the documentaries we've done about education. This one is called Hard Words. You can read a version of it online. I really recommend people listen to it. The audio version is not the same as the online version. There's more to it, especially more about how children learn to read. You can listen to it online. We also have a podcast called Educate, and it is available on that podcast.
Emily Hanford is an award-winning senior education correspondent at APM Reports, part of American Public Media. Her new documentary is called Hard Words, Why Aren't Kids Being Taught to Read? You can find it on apmreports.org. Can a special font make reading easier for a person with dyslexia? That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Can a font improve legibility for those suffering from dyslexia? I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, and today on the Academic Minute, Rob Hillier, Senior Lecturer in Graphic Design at Norwich University of the Arts, discusses a typeface that aims to combat this common learning disability.
Selexiad is a family of fonts that was designed and tested specifically for the needs of adult dyslexic readers. The typeface was developed through tests that measured readability and legibility of numerous texts set as individual characters, words, sentences, and paragraphs. The fonts used in the texts included Arial, Times New Roman, and formative versions of Selexiad set in different sizes. For the majority of non-dyslexic readers tested, it was the combination of serif styles, lowercase forms, large excites, medium weight, variable strokes, and normal interword spacing that was preferred. The non-dyslexic readers also favored the design of Times New Roman. Conversely, for the majority of dyslexic readers tested, it was the combination of handwritten style, uppercase forms, longer senders and descenders, lightweights, uniform strokes, perpendicular letter design, and generous interword spacing that was preferred. The dyslexic readers also favored the form of Selexiad Serif. The design of Selexiad is unusual in that the testing for legibility was undertaken during the actual design process. Selexiad was therefore informed and modified by reader feedback as the testing progressed. The research has raised issues that both confirm and contradict current principles of legibility. Most notably, from a dyslexic perspective, the idea that we read words as shapes has been challenged. Since designing Selexiad in 2006, the font has been used throughout the world, and it forms a key visual element within my own artistic and design practice.
That was Rob Hillier of Norwich University of the Arts. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.